With us this evening, Mr. Bill Stevens, president of Exxon USA, George Nelson, president of the Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, and Admiral Nelson of the Coast Guard. I'm going to give a very brief update of the status and allow plenty of time for questions because Mr. Stevens must leave at 7:15. He's going down to meet the governor in the morning bright and early and just meet some of the legislators and express his thoughts to them also. So we'll go through this very hurriedly. There are now 68 Exxon, 126 consultant or contract people, total 194 what we've been calling Exxon experts on the job, 200 work crews, 150 to 200 boat crews, 550 to 600 total people. We have removed 500,000 barrels of oil from the vessel. We have crossed the halfway point. Now we're now pumping to the Exxon San Francisco at 9,000 barrels an hour and have a 500,000 barrels to go. There is a map over here that you can examine at your leisure that shows the results of the infrared photography that we have been doing and spots the oil as we understand where it is today. And it has a legend down there that explains the colors. I would also like to read this announcement. Exxon has enlisted Crawford & Company, nationally recognized claims adjusters, to open offices in Valdez and Cordova to serve those individuals and businesses affected by the oil spill. Crawford's representatives will be available to answer inquiries, discuss settlements, and otherwise assist concerned parties. Recognizing local fishermen and others may require time to document their claims, Exxon plans to establish a fund at a local bank early next week to provide interest-free assistance to those where a delayed settlement would create a hardship. Details and requirements of the plan will be available at the claims office, at the claims offices. The location of the claims office in Valdez is Royal Center Building, 310 Egan Street, 99686. The phone number is, as announced earlier, 835-5406. In Cordova, it is in the Reluctant Fisherman's Inn, Post Office Box 150, if you're writing to them, Cordova, Alaska, 99574. The phone number there is 424-4202. And we will start the fund with a deposit of $10 million. Now this morning, I was asked several questions. I have the answers to some. As of Thursday afternoon, 7,600 barrels of oil had been recovered. There are no guns or other sound equipment being used to scare the birds from the oil areas. We have five lawyers working in the Exxon team. Exxon plans to salvage the Exxon Valdez. We are using, however, two outside experts to assist us in this effort. The question of mothership. Two motherships will be utilized. These ships are large vessels which contain supplies, food, equipment, and sleeping quarters for smaller ships which are actually utilized in cleanup of the specific areas. This arrangement allows for ships to remain on the scene and increases efficiency and cleanup effectiveness. The two motherships will be located on the east and west side of Night Island. Approximately three small vessels are assigned to each mothership. That concludes my statement, and now Mr. Stevens would like to make a statement.
Appreciate George Nelson and Admiral Nelson's willingness to come along and help I and Don deal with the questions this evening. I have the following statement I would like to make. In addition to the difficult problems presented by the catastrophic oil spill, we now have a human tragedy. As you no doubt already know, the National Transportation Safety Board announced today that the captain in command of the Exxon Valdez when the spill occurred had failed blood alcohol test. As a consequence, the following press release was issued earlier today and is available. Quote, Exxon Shipping Company announced today that it has terminated the employment of Captain Joseph J. Hazelwood. The termination followed the announcement by government investigators that this employee had failed the blood alcohol test administered on the Exxon Valdez last Friday morning. Frank Arossi, president of Exxon Shipping Company, said the decision to terminate the employee was made because he violated company procedures concerning the operation of the vessel, as well as company policies regarding alcohol. Quote, Mr. Arossi said, "We are all extremely disappointed and outraged that an officer in such a critical position would have jeopardized his ship, crew, and the environment through such actions. Our policies in this area are very clear." End press release and statement. With that, George, either of y'all have a prepared comment you want to make at the outset, or just wait and respond? We'll open it to questions.
Yes, on Nationwide TV tonight, they were showing dead seals in the bay. Now, do you consider that captain's job more important than the dead seals out there? That was on Nationwide TV. That program just went off the air just a few minutes ago.
Yes, we received some verbal reports of some oil seals ourselves this afternoon.
Well, they're showing that in the law report. This morning you're telling everybody there has been none seen out there. Now, what's true?
That what I told you this morning was true. We had seen none. I told you what I heard since this morning. And we don't compare the captain's job to the value of anything in the environment.
Great. That's why nothing's being done out there. That's why no locals are out there working. That's why you're dragging your feet about doing anything about it. You know, when are you going to do something? After there is no more commercial fishery industry left in the state?
Is there a question?
Yes, I'm asking you, what are you people going to start doing something out there instead of waiting and, keep talking, but you haven't done anything? You're going to wait until after the fishery is wiped out completely?
Sir, we have been standing up here for 6 days telling you what we're doing, and it's been growing every day.
Are there any immediate plans to change the way you screen crews that are going on tankers to make sure that their blood alcohol is fine or if their breath is fine? Are there any precautions you're going to take?
I feel certain that this event will cause all of us to rethink those policies, and I feel certain that our procedures will be modified.
But will there be anything? The tankers are going again. Will you do anything as quickly as next week?
We will move as quickly as we possibly can.
Can you tell us how Captain Hazelwood was notified of his termination and how he took the news?
He was notified by telex, which we confirmed receipt of. That's all I know.
Where is he? Telex. Is he still in Valdez?
We sent the telex to his home, which is his legal address as far as his employment status is concerned.
Where is that where he is now?
I don't know his whereabouts.
His home is in Long Island?
Yes.
In New York.
Is Exxon going to pay for his legal defense?
I hadn't considered that question. I doubt it.
Well, you hired a lawyer for him initially. Will you retain that lawyer, or will he now be dismissed?
We did not hire a lawyer for him. We recommended a lawyer. He's paying for it.
According to the lawyer, Exxon's paying for it.
Wait, I'm sorry. I stand corrected. You're right. The difficulty here is separating employee and company interest. And our standard practice in all proceedings of this is to pay for the retained counsel for an employee. Now, whether or not that changes as a result of his dismissal is a question in my view, and that's something I'll have to look at when I get back to Houston tomorrow.
Hazelwood's mother said that the company knew about his drinking problem. Is there something the company should have done before this accident to check on their crew members?
4 years ago, the company became aware that Captain Hazelwood had a problem with alcohol abuse, and in accordance with company policy, had made a rehabilitation program available to him. Captain Hazelwood voluntarily participated in this program in 1985. Mr. Arossi has said that he has inquired and has received no indications or reports that any of his managers were aware that the captain had experienced subsequent problems with alcohol abuse.
This is something that stays with a person for their life. What sort of responsibility should Exxon have exercised over this captain before the incident?
Exercise before the incident?
Given the fact that you knew of his history of alcohol abuse and the type...
Oh, before this incident. I'm sorry, I thought you were talking about the 85. The 85. As Don said a moment ago, clearly in light of this incident, we must go back and look at our practices following rehabilitation. I think there's a clear indication that they're in error, and we'll have to make some changes for, particularly for very critical skill occupations such as captain of a ship or tank truck driver of gasoline. Again, policies in error must be reexamined, changes to be made.
Mr. Stevens, was Exxon aware of his subsequent drunk driving convictions and the fact that his license was suspended in New York?
No, we were not. And I dare say that had we attempted to determine that, or had the Coast Guard attempted to determine that when they renewed his license, we would have both been sued for invasion of privacy.
Captain Hazelwood is.
I can't even understand one of the questions, much less five of them.
Where is Captain Hazelwood? You gentlemen must know where he is.
We don't.
He was staying at the Westmark Hotel.
Captain Hazelwood was relieved of duty, went on his own time, sometime over the weekend, I guess. And...
Wait a second. He was testifying before the NTSB right here in Valdez.
Well, he may have been. I didn't testify to the NTSB, and I didn't participate in that. I didn't see him at that hearing. So I'm telling you what we know.
So he may not have received notification then.
That's correct.
Since I don't know whether he was home or not, but under the employment statutes, this is a dismissal, sending it to his legal residence.
Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
How did you first learn about his drinking problem the first time? Did he be involved in another accident? Was there a complaint from the crew?
The employee voluntarily asked for rehabilitation, as my comment a moment ago indicated.
How long was he under rehabilitation?
I don't know. We're obviously going to have to go back into our records and determine some of those facts.
Yes. Is Exxon going to kind of blame everything on a drunken pilot, a captain, and kind of relieve yourself from all the responsibility of this oil spill?
No. And in fact, there's been nothing in our statements tonight or earlier that indicated we were attributing this accident in any way to alcohol. I've said many times that the cause of the accident is under investigation, and we're not making any statement pro or con with respect to cause as long as the NTSB and the Coast Guard investigation is underway.
Has there been any changes since then? I've been curious, if you talk to the local people, there's only two cabs in this town, you talk to cab drivers, they can tell you multiple incidents, people coming back and going to the terminal, very, very intoxicated. 4:30 today at the Pipeline Club, there was a very intoxicated person who is working on one of your ships that staggered to the bar, asked for a cab, and went back to work. Has there been any changes in your policy of employees coming to work?
Well, our policy is very clear. It's totally prohibited. And obviously, if we were aware, I don't mean me, I'm talking about the supervisors, that individual should not go to work.
And
I might say as well that the individual you mentioned, and I have no knowledge with respect to any of our employees, is risking his employment.
How can an employee get back on a ship if, in fact, he is that intoxicated, as that gentleman is pointing out?
I don't know that he can.
Okay.
I don't know that it's our employee, and I don't know that he can. And I would hope that he can. And, in fact, we need to be sure. Could I answer the last question before we take the next one? I would hope that our policy would be observed and that employee would not be allowed back on the ship if he happened to be ours. which I have no knowledge of.
Did ESCA ever notify you of a meeting that they had with prominent people in this town who complained to them that there was a drinking problem with tanker crews and indeed warned them that they were heading for a disaster if it wasn't cleaned up? Were you notified of that? Should you have been notified if you weren't?
I can't comment, George.
I'm unaware of any such warning or any such meeting, I'm sorry. If it took place, I'm totally unaware of it. I might comment a little bit on the security, and I think Chuck O'Donnell, our terminal superintendent, did so a couple days ago. When the cab who takes the individual, if he is a member of the crew, back over to the terminal, he has to go through the gate where our security is. And we search the cab, and if we find any alcohol, we destroy it. And if any member of riding in the cab appears to be intoxicated, we hold them at the gate and call one of the ship's officers, has to come to the gate and get them. And I believe that's the process.
How often does that happen, sir?
I have no idea.
How did this gentleman get past the gate?
Pardon me?
How did this gentleman get past the gate undetected? Obviously, he either drank before or after he was in the terminal.
If you're talking about the specific example here,
make no comment about the specific instance because of the legal proceedings currently underway.
Mr. Stevens, I was told by the Lieutenant Governor of Alaska that he was aware of this meeting, that people had reported to him about it. It seems strange that Alyeska wouldn't know about it. It seems to be quite a prominent story in town. Where is the breakdown here?
I make no comment about something I know nothing about. Other questions?
Yes. Mr. Stevens, the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation stated today to ABC News, at least, that the total amount of oil recovered so far from the spill is about 1%. It's now 1 week since the spill occurred. Could you give us an indication whether you expect to recover a lot more? He said he didn't think you were going to get any more oil up.
Well, if the comment was made in the context of mechanical skimmers as opposed to nearshore on beach cleanup, I could probably understand the comment. I was out there today. Many or most of you have been out there today and seen how the oil is collected out in the big stretches of water. And the efficacy of mechanical skimmers there is, you know, very questionable. But again, I repeat some of the comments I made last night in terms of full and a complete cleanup. That includes the beaches, the nearshore environments. I can't comment on the point that was being made or the context within which the DEC made that statement. I do think that the DEC and we have a common view toward the work that needs to be done, and that's what we're both in a cooperative fashion focusing on now.
Their point was that it's impossible to get hardly any more oil up and it's just going to be there and harm the environment.
That is not the experience with other spills of this sort around the world. It's not the commitment that we have made that I spoke to last night.
Mr. Stevens?
Yes, the young lady back here.
The captain received severance pay?
Whatever the legal requirements are, and not beyond that, will occur. I don't know what those legal requirements are, but nothing beyond that. Yes.
Mr. Stevens, I asked this question earlier today. Is Exxon self-insured? And if not, who do you have as an underwriter for your marine vessels?
We've got, of course, the TAPA fund. We are self-insured totally for the vessel damage and cargo losses. And the resolution of insurance on the remaining cost associated with this spill are indeterminate and will hinge on a whole range of legal questions. And I don't know underwriter. I can't make any comment about the underwriter. We can probably get you that information. We'll have at the next meeting.
I asked about this morning, Mr. Cornett, and I haven't received the answer yet.
Well, let's get it tomorrow.
Well, I got all the answers that I could get. I will still
work
on it. I'll do my best.
About Mr. or Captain Hazelwood's rehabilitation program, if in fact he volunteered to undergo the program, was he taken off sea duty while he was rehabbed? And if so, how long was that rehab and when was he allowed back on the bridge?
Again, I think I commented earlier that the specifics of the situation are something that we've got to research. Don't have the answers.
If in fact the captain is rehabbed,
that's something that we will be looking at, obviously. I can't comment what will be in on fact situation.
What are you planning on moving the Exxon Valdez?
Well, I'm not sure while I'm more current to you, but it now appears that we are going to require a third vessel, third laddering vessel, to come alongside. That's the most likely scenario. So instead of being through on Saturday, which is I think what we'd indicated to you last, we think it's going to take another half a day to make the changeover from the vessel that's alongside now to this third vessel. And it's probably going to be into Sunday, presuming things go well, before we're in a position to have all the oil that we can get off of that vessel. Just as soon thereafter as all of the assembled experts with the counsel of the Coast Guard, the vessel will be moved. We certainly don't want to leave her there. It's no one's interest to do that any longer than possible. Don, do you have anything to add to that? Yes.
At the beginning of the press conference, it was mentioned that 200 labor crews had been assembled. Could you give us an idea of how many people in all that involved and how many of them were hired locally?
Did you say 200 crews? Or? No, I don't. Don will handle that question.
I ran through this hurriedly a minute ago. We have 550 to 600 total people involved in this spill from all aspects. 150 to 200 are boat crews, 200 we have 200 work crews, 200 in work crews, 194 Exxon employees and consultants to Exxon.
For what percentage?
I'm sorry, I don't have it locally. You mean by in Valdez, Cordova, Alaska, or
Valdez?
I'm going to have to get it. I had a number this morning when I was here, but it didn't reflect this large number. I don't know how much of this is the local people, but I'll get you an answer.
Admiral Nelson,
where would the Valdez be moved to?
That's something that is currently under intense study, and in fact, is why Franco Rossi is not with us tonight. Reached the point where there's some critical work underway regarding the vessel salvage, movement and salvage, and so that's what Frank's doing this evening. So we don't know. As soon as we have made a decision, and with, again, the full, I'm sure, consultation of the proper authorities, we'll let you know.
Yes. What is the reason you don't use the people from Smith International of Rotterdam? They are in Anchorage, and they...
I know the firm well. I know the firm well, did business with them the years I was in Europe. We've made no decisions on who we're going to use or who we're not going to use.
But they are yet now in Anchorage. The people
Pardon me, what are you speaking with respect to the mechanical salvage work?
Yes, and they have a lot of experience with oil spoiling and so on.
Well, again, I was answering the context of salvage. Yes.
Can you tell us what the total cost of the cleanup effort might be?
No, and we've not sat down and even taken a wild guess. No, do not. Do not. Don't have. In fact, pardon.
Question for you.
Yes. Just. She had a question here for the
Admiral.
I should probably ask Mr. Stevens if he wants to yield. You're having so much fun.
There have been reports from the chairman of Exxon in New York pointing the finger at your organization for delaying an immediate response within hours of the spill. In fact, Mr. Lawrence Rawl blames not only you but state officials for delaying the cleanup because of regulations and getting the green light. Do you have an answer to that?
Well, let me say something, and Mr. Stevens should address this because he probably has a more more pertinent response, but I want to add something later. Maybe I
use it perhaps. Let me make my comment first, since it was a statement attributed to my chairman. Talk to Mr. Raw. He feels he was misquoted. He was not intending to point a finger or blame anybody for anything. He was commenting his view on the factual situation. I think possibly sometime later in the evening, the governor made some comments on this same point, and it sounded to me like he and the governor totally agreed and that there was not on either part finger-pointing or attribution of blame. Admiral?
I guess what I was going to say is I got a frantic call that made that same statement, and before it was explained to me that it had been misquoted. And so we scrambled around with one of these 10-minute responses to get the someone educated in a hurry and gave them what we thought was the answer. But I want to say that from personally, I decided I would not respond to it. And I'll tell you why. You know, we, I think, have got an organization effect that we didn't have before. We met first on Sunday, and that's the agencies that met, the three that are probably answering questions from all of you. They're all legitimate, but it gets difficult when you get an answer from one and it seems to be contradictory and you get the answer from the other. I'm speaking of the state, at the bottom of environmental conservation, Exxon, and the Coast Guard. So we got together and we decided to form two groups. I don't know how much you've heard about this, but we do have an operations coordinating group. These are people, say, one level down, if you will, but they have full authority to direct the resources that we all have, that Exxon's bringing in, that all of us are trying to employ. And the suggestion that, you know, there's no work going on out there, you could disappoint a whole heck of a lot of people who are sitting in those bays and are running around those ships and flying those aircraft steadily every day. The group consists of all representatives of the ADEC, the Coast Guard, the Exxon, local fisheries, and we have tied Mr. Jack Lamb and the folks from Cordova came over there with their boats. We have an addition of the so-called steering committee, represented by Mr. Iarossi, Mr. Kelso, and I, and they decided we should have a nominal chairman, if you will, and for some reason, I must have drawn the short straw, but I've been identified as the chair of their steering committee. What I'm saying, and I don't want to respond to that, is that it's so easy to be running around spending all the time trying to stamp out these little fires that it's very difficult to do what we all agree is a job, and that is to get that oil cleaned up.
Admiral, when did Exxon ask for permission to use dispersants, and how long did it take the Coast Guard to give them an answer?
That is precisely one of the issues that is really not worth commenting, frankly, because at this stage, you know, what I'm saying is that's not going to do a thing to solve the problem we ought to be spending our time on right now. We do have a factual list of how it goes. It doesn't matter. I can recall being down here Saturday, and the tenor of the questions on use of dispersants was, my God, you aren't going to throw those chemicals out in that water indiscriminately, are you? Tuesday we were here, and the question was, how come you missed that window on Sunday? You know, it's pretty hard to shift gears. Hell.
A lot of local officials now are saying that they got the impression that after the federal officials left yesterday that they were not going to see any federal a declaration of a federal disaster area here. Two questions. One, have you gotten any indication of whether that's going to happen? And number two, how large an area of the spill did Skinner and the others see? Were they shown a large area or just a small piece?
No, we flew the whole thing. I was with them when we came down from Elmendorf in the C-130, and we had identified the night before, in fact, with our group, or day before that. It is starting to run together. But we identified the three, the hatchery of San Juan, Ashami, and Esther, and the other estuary that had the livestock as being the principal areas. Now, that's the information we went away from here with. So I told the pilots coming down and I wanted to drop down and go over each of those and see what kind of booming operations were going on, what else is being done, because that's where the effort was going to be geared when we left. We, frankly, I was very encouraged when we got down over Esther to see that there wasn't a great lot of oil that was encroaching on it. That was encouraging. It was, as we went down, it looked the same way. By the time we got to San Juan, it looked like it was a little bit more activity. There's a lot more since then. We swung up along the east side of Night Island and cut through the pass, and then we saw some activity, and then we saw some thick oil, and it was obvious that the conditions had changed since the time that we left and were focusing on those hatcheries. So we went back in here, took a helicopter, and went down to the low level so we could see the concentration of oil on the beaches. It's ugly, there's no question about it. I've been out a couple more times since then. Yesterday, I went out again in the afternoon with Senator Murkowski after we got back, and we had another, I can't say it's a pleasant look, a good look, I guess. I was out again today with Senator Lautenberg of New Jersey, and we had another good look at the area after he also had had a C-130 peek at it, and all the way down to San Juan Hatchery.
Admiral Wilson, I mentioned to Mr. Cornett today that you don't exactly have to raise your finger to be finger pointing. There's been a lot of nudge-nudge, wink-wink, and the message is clear that they're unhappy that they couldn't unload their disbursements, which is part of the contingency plan. And they told us this morning, as a matter of fact, that they weren't allowed by the Coast Guard until 6:45 p.m. on Sunday to use disbursements. We're also told by Commander McCall that they, Coast Guard, did not need DEC permission to allow the use of disbursements in Zone 1, which is not considered to be an environmentally sensitive zone. Having said all that, it sure looks like the finger's being pointed at you.
Got a question?
Yep, it is. Is the finger being pointed at you?
I don't think so. I really don't think so, because we start talking about the volume is on hand, all the rest of it. It's a big issue. It's a very sensitive issue. As I said, it was sensitive in the respect that nobody wanted to throw it out there the other day. There was a test done on, I guess it was, and that was sort of inconclusive with a helicopter. That was done. I was wrong the other day when I was standing up here and talked about what could be done in Zone 1, because I didn't know. I said that they still had to get the touch base as far as Zone 1 goes. That is a pre-approved plan that was signed, I think, March 8, not too long ago. The agreement that the on-scene coordinator, Commander McCall, can use dispersions if he thinks it's proper in Zone 1 without going to the RT, as it goes up from there, you know, in Zone 3, you really aren't supposed to touch at all. But I don't feel that. And what I'm saying is, hey, look at whatever we did, if I wanted to feel sensitive about it or whatever, it's not going to help us solve what we're trying to do right now. And we need to spend time on that. Well, our group is working very well, okay? They're working well. It's not home on a range. There's a little discouraging word now and then. But we're working. We're talking to each other, trying to work it out. Commissioner Kelso, Mr. Iarossi, and I have been trying to meet every night. We'll meet here if there's enough time between now and whatever our prescribed bedtime is this evening.
But Admiral Nelson, do I hear a mea culpa on the part of the Coast Guard for that?
I'm not saying that, no. No, I don't feel that. We could sit here and argue about this because I don't think what they say and what we say maybe necessarily jive, and it's not worth arguing about.
Admiral, the Coast Guard said earlier today that proceedings have begun that might lead to the revocation of Captain Hazelwood's master's license. Are there hearings scheduled? If so, when? And also, do you know the whereabouts of the captain right now?
I don't know the whereabouts of the captain. Originally, I think we said that the NTSB was going to open formal hearings next week in Anchorage. I was told last night that was delayed, and I don't know what the time is. We were saying Tuesday. It's delayed beyond that.
But that's separate from the Coast Guard's inquiry.
Yeah, and I asked my public affairs officer if ours was terminated, and I don't think so. I think they're running concurrently. However, I know that one of the people who was participating in ours has been talking to the NTSB, so that information is shared.
Well, the question I'm leading to is, will Captain Hazelwood be called to testify at your proceedings, and if so, what date and time?
I don't know. I don't know that he has yet. I think that we probably stood back and let the NTSB do theirs at the time. We could use the testimony and evidence that comes out of that report, but I can't tell you honestly what the follow-on action is yet, but I'm sure he'll respond if he needs it.
Without his attorney, he did not have to be present at your particular proceeding before the administrative law judge.
He did not have to be there.
We were told that the captain did not have to be there, so you haven't heard anything.
Admiral, can you give us the specific reason for the proceedings against Captain Hazelwood?
He ran a ship aground.
Mr. Nelson,
yes.
Earlier this evening, there was questions regarding a meeting that was held here in Valdez with some of the local community members. And there certainly are people in this building and in this room tonight that were present at that meeting. It was held March 2nd. That meeting, it was very emotional about the fact that we were concerned about the quality of the crews that were being put on these tankers. And I don't think there is a Valdez person in this room that won't say that these people have been abusing alcohol. And if you don't do anything else here, the Coast Guard is to blame, Exxon's to blame, and Alyeska's to blame, and we're to blame. Let's make sure the restrictions is that nobody can drink on those tankers. And if nothing else, if you can assure this audience in this state that you're going to make some restrictions, if you are so insulated in Houston and in Anchorage that you don't know this is going on, then I think we need to open up a lines of communication.
As I said in my previous answer, I apologize for not knowing, but I did not know about the meeting. I was not disputing that a meeting took place in regard to the drinking of the crews. I explained what our process is, and I'll assure that we'll be working with the tanker operators and the Coast Guard to implement any appropriate changes. That's all I can tell you. I'm sorry I did not know about the meeting on March 2nd. I don't deny it took place, and I don't, you know, I'm not arguing with you about your concern.
Mr. Nelson, could you report back to us if people here took notice of that meeting and smartened up their procedures in any way to act on the townsfolk's complaints?
All I can report on to you is what we at Alyeska do in terms of the crews coming off the tankers and primarily back to the tankers through our security system, our security gate over there at the terminal. As to other controls, that would be up to the tanker operators and the Coast Guard, I believe. So all I can tell you is what we do at our gate, basically.
Mr. Nelson, did those procedures change at all after that meeting?
I do not know. I will find out. I'll talk to the terminal superintendent tonight, if I can chase him down and find out what took place.
Admiral?
Dan?
The other day I asked Mr. Stevens, Mr. Cornett, and Mr. R. Rossi, and Mr. R. Rossi said that the Coast Guard is responsible after this ship is brought off of that rock. I think there's a concern. What direction is this vessel going? I don't think that the people of Valdez are really sure that this vessel should come back into this harbor and become a monument in this bay right here.
Yeah, I can understand that concern, and Commissioner Kelso and Mr. Iarossi and I feel like this is one of the issues that we have to deal with as a steering committee. Probably first off, now obviously, and we've talked to Mr. Stevens a little bit, not to Mr. Iarossi. Well, I guess we did talk a little bit about having to have a plan in place as soon as it becomes floatable, if you will, to be removed. Now, before that, it can go anywhere that has to be seaworthy.
You must have a contingent on this. I mean, I hear the contingent, there's dozens of them now, and I'd like to know what that contingent is.
What you mean by a contingent?
You have a plan. You must have some ideas where you're going to go with this.
We've that is one of the places considered, but I'll let you tell me where it ought to go here.
I can give you an idea where I want it.
Okay. The bottom? The point is, if it has to be repaired before it can go out and beyond into Prince William Sound or into the Gulf.
Does that mean
outside
that it will come into this?
No, tell me where it ought to be worked on.
I don't think that it should be
worked
on.
You don't want to put it in any of the other bays because they're just
you're telling me that basically that ship's coming back into this bay then.
I didn't say that. It's one of the considerations. You've got a shorter logistics chain here. I mean, if it were going to be worked on, but it can't go south without being fixed.
What's the seaworthiness of the ship right now?
I'm sorry?
What do you know about the seaworthiness of the ship?
Well, only that it's been doing quite well. The naval architect has been down there on scene. The divers check it out each time before. They did not connect up to San Francisco immediately when they terminated with the Baton Rouge because they wanted to get the divers down to look at the port side, be sure that was the integrity was satisfactory. And so they delayed it from hooking up at night and get down in the morning. So, you know, every time we hear that, it's another plus. It's looking good, but everybody's sitting there cautiously optimistic, I guess.
Admiral Nelson?
Yes, ma'am.
You've been incredibly fortunate with your weather.
Yes.
First period of calm, and now that we've had consistent north-northeasterly winds. But we've all lived here long enough to know that the winds do not blow north-northeasterly forever. And we're very concerned about this movement of the oil. Do you have contingency plans for a boom here and a boom across Esther Passage to protect the Cog Hill fishery and this area of the Sound or Port Neliwan? And is booming equipment coming that would be sufficient to do this, or are you looking for logs and other types of methods? Because the wind may not change directions, but we would certainly like to have it in place before the wind changes directions rather than after the wind changes directions.
Well, this is something that an operational and coordinating committee, I guess we call it, takes under consideration. As I said, we spotted and decided that just get the activity going on those hatcheries because the fishermen said, hey, this is it. This is our livelihood. If we lose our wild stocks, this is the future.
We agree. That was several days ago. And we understand that there is more equipment arriving. There are more boats. The Homer fishermen are coming over with their boats. Whittier has boats. What is being done now for these areas? Are you ready to move on to the next step?
I guess what I'm saying, I've just heard that we're not doing enough cleanup in where we are. You know, that's got to go on. But I guess what I'm saying is I don't know who we is when you say we. And what?
Asking if your committee.
No, I know. I meant you. I should say when you should use the word we. If you've got those ideas, we want them, or our coordinating group wants them.
I'm asking you. You ought to be able to look at a chart and see if the wind blows southeasterly, where the oil is going to go, and have you developed a contingency plan, or do you have a plan in motion now to protect the Cod Hill fishery and this part of Prince William Sound? I mean, there are two very narrow passageways that provide access to this tremendously rich fisheries and recreation area. And it would seem that one could, if you're getting enough equipment up here, or using other means to bar these off. And I'm asking, before the wind changes directions, is this something you're looking at, and have you started implementing it?
Well, I'll add a second one first. I don't know that we've started implementing it. This is something certainly that our committee has to look at. I'm not going to stand up and say, yes, we have done it, because I don't know. I have to ask them. We'll ask them tonight. It's a very legitimate concern and a legitimate direction to go. And you know, the local knowledge is what we think we're working on now. We're trying to take the information. I'm not sure we'd have been going exactly where we're going right now if we hadn't had the advice of the fishermen who live here.
I have a question for Mr. Nelson.
Yes, Shannon.
You know, now that we've had this accident and there's been a lot of debate about the contingency plan and your response to it, but that's over now and you're responding and the equipment is out there. My question is, since tanker traffic is still moving, do you have the equipment to meet the contingency plan right now?
Yes, we do. That question was asked this morning. Let me finish this. The question was asked this morning, and yes, we do have the equipment both at the pump stations and the terminal. The terminal over here reopened, this is Thursday, on Tuesday, and we had two tankers come in, and before those tankers came in, we discussed with both the ADC and the Coast Guard the amount of equipment, oil spill response equipment we still had on board. We had already boomed the berths, and we had the boom to put around the tankers as they came in. So my answer is yes, we are prepared to meet those needs if something would happen.
Admiral, I have two questions here. Considering the concern that obviously I'm not the only one that's concerned about this, I was approached downtown tonight by two tanker crewmen of a tanker that is here in the port right now. The question why there was no testing done for cocaine because it is of such frequent use on the tankers. Is there a reason why that wasn't done or no one thought of it? Or apparently, and I didn't ask, they came up and said, we're off the tankers and we can't go say anything, but we feel that this should have been done.
I don't know. I don't know if it was or was not done. I know the blood was taken. I don't know if it was your analysis.
Could you find out if that was tested for also?
Yeah.
And Mr. Cornett, I hate to be redundant.
Is that two?
Yeah. The other one's for him.
Good.
Yeah. sorry. I know I've asked this before, but I was just approached by someone here about 15 minutes ago who is going out with Vico tomorrow. The issue of air, I'm just going to, you know, somebody obviously has to determine if that's necessary, and I'm not qualified. But they are being sent, they do not even have rubber gloves. They are being sent with cotton gloves. What effect is cotton gloves going to have when they're putting their hands down in oil? It is already peeling the paint off of boats, and they're being sent without any rubber gloves. So if you could just check into that, I'm sure a lot of people
Normally you don't put your hands down in the oil when you're cleaning it up. You normally wear plastic, gloves.
Pictures on the TV of people with their hands in the oil.
Well, I'll reserve judgment on why they have their hands in the oil. We give them normally gloves that are cotton gloves with little plastic stickers on the inside that rake handles and shovel handles will not turn in, and I don't know why they have their hands down in the oil.
Mr. Corrett?
Yes?
I just came over from Cordova today.
Yes, I remember you.
Yeah, and apparently you aren't communicating too well with the Admiral, because we had already told you, I represent the Cordova District Fishermen's Union right now, we had already told you that we have a whole fleet of boats ready to go. All we needed was your okay and money. We had come up with the boom material to boom off various bays around the Sound, yet the Admiral says that he hasn't got that word and doesn't know of the plan. I thought you guys were communicating now. Where's the communication? We're ready to go, and we can't get the go-ahead.
Well, when I spoke in Cordova, we had 15 fishing boats working.
This 15
today,
out of a huge fleet.
Today we have, well, let me look at the number one more time here. We have 150 to 200 people working in boat crews, and I read a list of boats, or I had a list of boats last night, which added up to 48 boats last night, and I'm sure there have been boats added today. It is a matter of time. Today I was asked the question of when the employment would peak, and the answer that I got from the gentleman who is doing the hiring for NORCON, that he expected to be sometime around 2 to 3 weeks. I think you would expect that the boat employment would peak sometime in that same area, but
not the boat employment, it's the booming off the base. Our people don't even care if they're employed. They don't want to be employed. They want to save this exquisite and beautiful and environmentally rich Prince William Sound. They don't care about the money. They want to get these bays boomed off and start saving our wildlife and our fisheries. And were you also aware that there were two killer whales dead, sightings of two dead killer whales on both Evans and Squire Island? We don't care about the money. We want to get our environment cleaned up here. And we've got the crews and the materials. We just can't seem to get in on this hierarchy of coordinating efforts here.
Well, there are two companies doing hiring. Two companies doing hiring, Vico and NORCON.
They're how come you're subcontracting? Aren't you responsible?
Yes, we're responsible, and we are. That's the way we do this work.
Very responsible.
Mr. Stevens,
you have a question.
Mr. Stevens, we heard on the 5:30 news that there was an offer from Norway to do some cleanup operations, and that you guys accepted that. If that's true, how do you plan to keep with your promise of local hire issue?
About that?
I received a letter from the Norwegian consul in Anchorage saying they had 5 or 6 people who were involved in the environmental ministry, something like the DEC here, I guess, who wanted to come over here as observers to learn from this oil spill in this northern environment. I invited them to come on, not as our guests, but that we would try to make as much of the information available to them and let them see it, but they make their own arrangements. I had no offer of help or equipment or workers from Norway, or I'm not aware of any. We also had an offer from the Soviet Union, which we have passed on to the state, or referred them to the DEC. They had several large vessels that they wanted to bring in, and we thought that would be appropriate for the state to consider all the ramifications of that.
This
gentleman in the back here.
Two quick questions. Can we give a figure every day for the amount of barrels covered?
Is that just off the water, or is that off the water or beaches?
That's oil that we have skimmed off the water, is my understanding.
When you start skimming it off beaches, pouring it, you know, putting it in cans and stuff, would that increase the figure of recovered oil?
Well, normally we just skim until there is no free oil left on the water. And the number is just to show that we're making some progress. Once you get on shore, you don't just get the oil. You get all the trash and everything that's on the shore, and it really is cans and cans and drums of trash. And we quit counting, you know, trying to estimate the barrels recovered at that point.
The question, then you could show progress by saying tonnage of crack in these things?
By saying what?
Tonnage of collection?
Sure. Sure.
One other question. If it looks like the wind's blowing this stuff out in the Gulf of Alaska, or it's going to blow a good amount of it out in the Gulf of Alaska, do you have to chase it all the way out there, too?
According to this map, we are sighting some sheen down in the end of the this channel. We have to clean the oil up as long as the Coast Guard says there's oil there to be cleaned up. They're in charge of this.
Question for Mr. Stevens. 7,600 barrels have been recovered so far out of nearly a quarter of a million spilled. As I understand it, dispersants are no longer a viable way to go. You can't burn it. What does that leave you? Is it just skimming that you are left to do
skimming,
now?
Skimming, but I think as we indicated, I believe Frank Orossi in his comments indicated last night, clearly this has moved into a phase where the ultimate cleanup, the bulk of the cleanup, is going to come in near shore and beach environment.
How long do you estimate this cleanup will now take since in a whole week you've only gotten 7,000 barrels back?
Well, again, that's affected by the distribution of the oil on a vast amount of water out there. How long it's going to take to clean up the beach environment, if you will, is indicated, I think, to you yesterday by the announcement that we're renting an office building, good size office building in Valdez, and that Frank Orossi is taking a house here. We're going to get this job done. We're going to do it completely, however long it takes us. And we'll be here. I feel sure we are talking about months, but we're going to do it as fast as we can, as fast as is reasonable.
Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens for Mr. Cornett, please.
Sure.
I'm sorry. Don, I know you got enough trouble as it is already, but in reference to Doris's concern about the workers.
Who's Doris?
That's your friend over here, the one that you recognize from day one. On 3 days ago, on the front page of the Anchorage Daily News, there's a boat out there that I know you don't know the name of it, but it's called the Dorcas. It's a little blue and white cabin rig. And on the very front page in bright color, three of my best good friends are out there with their bare hands, and they're in crude oil up to their elbows, handling an oil boom. And like I say, I realize you've got an awful lot of problems, but geez, I kind of like these guys, and I'd hate to see them croak. I really wish you would possibly address these workers that are going out. And the problem is they're trying too hard, and they're not thinking about their health and their potential near future. I wish you guys would really push that issue and make those guys wear those gloves and say, look, if you don't wear them, then it's your problem, but at least issue the equipment to them, would you please?
Well, I'll take care of that.
Thank you very much.
I'm wondering if there will be a mechanism in place soon to allow volunteers to clean beaches?
We normally don't use volunteers for the reasons I've explained many times in here, because they need to be covered by workman's compensation so that they don't go out there and get hurt and cause real problems.
Mr. Cornett?
One question. World War II, they had a double bottom in their liberty ships. How come the law doesn't agree, or maybe it does, I don't know, American law, in having single bottom ships? Can you answer that question, please?
Let me say that the law does not require the double bottoms, but I remember when Congress was considering requiring double bottoms, one of the arguments against it was, in a double bottom, you use that area for buoyancy. Okay? When you go on a rock, like this rock that the Valdez is on, when you break that bottom, what happens is that area that was buoyancy fills with water. And tends actually to aggravate the the grounding because the ship, through loss of buoyancy, sinks further on the rock. And then you have to, if you have to pull it off, you're pulling against two sheets of metal. But it really was complicated. Now, a lot of people didn't buy that argument. But that was one argument on the other side. But all arguments considered, Congress did not require it. I certainly do, and it has been debated for years and will continue, I am sure.
Mr. Cornett?
Well, will you, I understand you're bringing another third vessel afterwards alongside. Will this be to take the last possible sludge, or will there be remaining oil? And also, will that ship be necessary in ungrounding the stuck vessel, do you feel, or do you think it'll come off under its own power?
The salvors will work a plan to slowly and very carefully lift the ship off the rocks with buoyancy.
This time that you will be successful in that effort?
They're fairly optimistic, much more so than when the grounding first happened. But part of the question that you asked was, will the water in the ship be clean, all the oil be gone? The third one's coming up to take off the last part of that million barrels.
Will that last little dab then be sent, or will that ship then be sent out of the sound and on?
It'll go south.
I think Frank Arossi addressed this question, was it last night? It seemed like the night before. So I recall Frank's answer. He said that his experts tell him that we should be able to recover with this current pumping operation 97% of the oil on the vessel. There'll still be 3%. He prefers to give the answer 95%. Still be, and because it's going to be oily water, if you will, and there's just no way, you're pumping the ocean dry, if you will.
Do you feel that there's any additional danger in bringing ships up and taking them back off? Apparently, you've been fairly successful at this time. It just seems to me the more times that you have to come up alongside that ship with a vessel of that size that you are, in fact, running another risk.
Well, agreed totally, but both with respect to the lightering operation, the third vessel, and with respect to the salvage operation, raising it up, we've got the best experts that we can hire in industry as well as from our own company, and those really are the bases for the judgments. It's not somebody like Don or me, if you will.
I'm very sure that you people do. One last question before everybody else jumps on it. Do you feel that when you are fully unloaded, whether you have 3 or 5% is irrelevant, you will have at least successfully gotten the remaining danger of the oil off the boat? Do you people feel that you will have enough water under the vessel to then free float the boat after it is unloaded? Or is it still going to be hung up even after it's been unloaded?
Well, the secret to getting it off the rock, of course, is to increase the buoyancy of the vessel and raise it off the rock.
Do you feel that you have got that kind of margin to work with at this time?
Since I'm leaving town, it's probably easy to commit somebody to do something. But I think once a plan is agreed, that it might be useful to have somebody that knows really what they're talking about on this point answer some questions like this.
I've been out here for 18 years, and I got a pretty good idea.
Vessels of this size?
Try me.
This lady's...
Yeah, a big concern is, you know, the tanker and the half million barrel oil that's still sitting there. Unfortunately, everything seems to be going well. You told me this morning that the boom was surrounding the tankers, and at 11:30 that was not so. Are you having difficulty with that boom, or...?
That boom is driving me crazy. Every time we check it, it's there, and when you check it, it's not there. I sent a whole helicopter crew out there.
Well, I saw videos, and there's no... The story you gave me this morning, you know, of why maybe what I thought was a U, that story, if you recall. But it was just so abstract. There was some here, some there.
I was out there today. Went out to visit a little bit with the crew, and my recollection is that there's a Coast Guard boat on location working that boom to be sure that it is kept there. So again, that's to assure that it's being handled right, not to manage it. That's our responsibility.
Issue, but it just seems like you've been requested, and it's an important issue.
Mr. Cornett, I understand you met with union representatives today. Has there been any commitments made on union versus non-union hire for the cleanup? Can you comment?
There have been commitments made on union and non-union.
How about any percentage deal, like 50-50?
They're working that out as they go. There's no commitment on how they divide it up at this point.
I was told by VECO representatives that the beach work was going to be done by VECO, shore support was going to be done by Union. Is that true? Has a decision been made?
That is how we started out. NORCON is doing all this logistical stuff onshore and VECO is offshore. But as time goes along, that could shift.
Mr. Cornett, with the oil slick starting to exit Prince William Sound now, are any precautions being made for the protection of Seward and the Kenai Fjords National
Park? We're discussing those considerations.
Have you made an offer to the city of Seward to provide them funds to boom off Resurrection Bay?
We haven't really sat down. They came over. I have not. They came over this afternoon and talked to some people. I was told this as I came out the door that they were talking to the city of Seward. I don't know what they concluded, but I think they have more discussions. At this point, we don't really know. We need to get a feel for just whether there is really a threat there or not. As soon as there is, we will act on that.
You had the best salvage operators in the world helping refloat the tanker. Which salvage companies do you have employed?
We have not picked the salvage company, is my understanding. We have them standing by, but we have the people with the expertise that I referred to are the people who are on the ship working, Exxon people and the consultants.
Do you have a company out of Holland coming in?
I think Smith International is out of Holland. They are, the gentleman asked a question about them a while ago. They are standing by looking for work.
Admiral Nelson, there's suspicion that the captain was drinking. Why didn't the Coast Guard search the captain's cabin to find any material evidence that might be used?
I think they were concentrating on it, getting the sample. I don't know why they went beyond that. I'm not sure that they would have been proper to do that.
At the moment, Admiral, they had 7 hours. The Coast Guard official comes on board, smells liquor, and the biggest oil spill this part of the town has ever seen, and never questioned, never searched his cabin.
Well, there's a lot of other things they're trying to do. They're getting bell logs, they're gathering all the documentary evidence they can so they can determine why that ship went aground.
They can. How come they don't search his cabin?
I don't.
He locked up his vessel for less than an ounce of marijuana just a little over a year ago, and they searched it.
Sir, can we expect to see all three of you gentlemen out there on the beaches with some sweats on, some rubber boots on, cleaning up this mess and getting your own hands in it so you have a better feeling about how we feel about it? Or are you going to remain in your offices? We'd love to see you out there on the beaches cleaning it up.
I can guarantee I'd rather be out there. I have pulled people out of oil and have gotten messed up. I do know what it means. And I'd rather be out there than sitting in the office or standing here. Yes, sir.
For whoever, I guess, okay. Mr. Barnett.
We'll take about 3 more questions.
Okay.
You're one.
Yeah, I have several concerns here. I just got off the boat from over in Net Island, and I just got off about 2 hours ago, and there are some things I think you should know about. One.